Rebirth. Yes, so rebirth is a logical necessity. If there is an individual soul, rebirth is a logical necessity because soul is on a journey of evolution. See, this has been another problem with traditional understanding. Soul is a static supernumerary like the 12th man. Not even the 12th man. 14th man who is in the team but his only task is he has just gone and comes back. Supernumerary. But the soul is the master of the house. That's the whole figure. It's on a journey. But what is the journey? It's on an evolutionary journey. Evolutionary journey means in a seed, just as the whole tree is involved in the seed. But over years, decades, it has to develop into the tree. So also, each individual soul, again, I'm not going into the metaphysics of individual soul vis-a-vis oneself, but we can talk about it. But so each individual soul is representing some aspect or power of the divine which it has to become over a period of time. And there is in it a divine impulsion. That's what the supermind is, the real idea. It will push you through everything. It's there as a compulsion in things. Like in a seed, there is a compulsion that mango tree, the langda mango will grow into a langda mango. And whatever other mango, elf also mango will grow into elf and so. The neem tree will grow into a neem tree. Because there is a divine compulsion. But this compulsion cannot finish in one form, one life, because one life is too brief for the task at hand. So rebirth is an evolutionary process, not of reward and punishment. So only thing is, if we don't undertake yoga, still we will evolve to that point, but maybe through 100 lives. If we undertake yoga, we concentrate that 100 into maybe 10 lives, one life, 10 years. That's the difference. That means so much less of all the suffering, pleasure and pain that comes in the process. So yoga is concentrating the evolution in a short span of time, what would normally take place through lives. Now when one realizes, does rebirth cease? Well, a free soul is a free soul. It may choose to come back, it may not choose to come back. It may choose to participate in God's work consciously. These are people born with the clarity of their mission. They may or may not be religious, it doesn't matter. But they know what they are here to do. From very early age, they become aware because they are conscious souls which have chosen. It may participate in the yoga of transformation. It may join oneself to one of the great Godheads. So every possibility is there. But basically, the soul in ignorance must make the transition from an ignorant state when it doesn't know itself, doesn't know the divine, doesn't know the purpose, doesn't know why, who, what, when, where, to a soul in knowledge. So this transition is the first step through yoga. And it takes place when the soul is ready. So that's why when mango is ripe, it falls on the ground. Or just a little shaking of the tree, you don't have to be Hanuman, just shake the tree, it will fall. But if mango is unripe, kacha, it requires a lot of effort. That's why there is a time. And if you see that way, everything changes the perspective. Like all of us who are sitting here. Now, we may think that I made a choice because of this reason, that reason. But that's not true. There is a deeper compulsion which is pushing everybody from life to life that today we are all here. And that also gives the supreme hope that this is not a random casual event. There are lives behind this moment. And hopefully they would be just few years ahead of this moment till we realize that truth. So this is how it is. Before that, you may tell anybody about anything. It doesn't matter. People go to listen to katha to come back the same. So, but all these feats acts like a feeder. So rebirth is an evolutionary mechanism, not a tribunal of justice. God is not a judge. That's Sunny Maharaj's job description. It does it admirably well. Because even there, that justice is a cleansing. We can't blame him. But that's not God's business. Because for him, there is no other. Look at from his perspective. It's like I am punishing myself. I am rewarding myself. So that's the rebirth mechanism. The individual soul goes from... And if it has completed a certain amount of yoga, let's say in a life it practiced very imperfectly, nishkam karma, very imperfectly, equanimity, then next life, because he knows that poor fellow tried, so come back with a bonus. So I use this term that it is, we are all these actions which are done impersonally as nishkam karma, as an offering to God, that's not for my own sake but for your sake, they are deposited in the, not the hundi of the karma law, they are deposited in the hundi of DDB, Divine Development Bank, which never collapses, okay, because it's infinite. That's why it doesn't collapse. So he knows the struggles and everything, and he's compassionate. So he takes care of all the issues, that challenges. I mean, he's supremely compassionate. So effort should be there from our side. However little, doesn't matter. That's why Shri Krishna says in the Gita, because Arjun says wonderful things. Do you think I can do it? He says, Swalpamasya dharmasya. Even a little of it will liberate you. So he reveals the whole thing, but try. Even that little try is enough for God, because grace compensates for the rest.
You said that this nishkama karma and karma yoga concept is not found in Vedas and Upanishad. But this yajna spirit of action in the yajna bhava, and also Ishavasya Upanishad.
Yes, Ishavasya Upanishad is, I agree. But nishkama karma is there. I was speaking particularly of the idea of the three purushas. The Uttamam Purusha, it is there, but very, very much in the background. If you see the traditional Upanishadic understanding, it is life in ignorance, which is Maya. And life, there is no life, but a release in Brahman, in which the illusion goes away. This is the traditional understanding. Isha Upanishad is a big nutcracker for all the people who interpret. Now, Nishkam Karma is different. Slightly different from the yajna karma. Again, yajna has been interpreted unfortunately by the Ved Vadins as an external yajna. Again, it's Sri Krishna who brings to the forefront that yajna is inside. So yajna is an offering. Yes, but I may offer to the divine, as the Gita itself clarifies, I may do all the yajna, which is there in the Veda. Whole Yajurveda, you have so many mantras. And all these I may do for worldly goods. That's exactly what the Gita says. It's Ved Vadin. I may do it to get a good progeny. Now what am I doing? I'm taking the help of the gods. Which
is interpreted in Karma
Kanda. That's what.
Jnana Yoga interprets it as.
Yes, Jnana Yoga interprets it. So to that extent, but the yajna can be done that way. So only yajna is not enough. Yajna, what is the aspiration behind it? So if the aspiration is for realizing the divine, then absolutely, or for the Brahmi sthiti, it's perfectly fine. But generally as it comes, if you read the mass of Vedic literature, as it appears before, is given to us, even now you will see that much of yajna is done. Putra Kamishti Yajna, which people do, they do for dana, they do for all kinds of things. So the only difference is, instead of your own effort, you are involving the gods. Which sometimes it's not a very good thing, because it weakens your own energies. It's probably better not to believe that way. I'm saying from a very impersonal standpoint. In the gods and say, well, there are no gods to help us. I must be a go-getter. I must do my job well and earn money. At least, you know, your energies increase. So that becomes a very debatable thing, whether it's a good thing or not really good thing. But there is a deeper meaning of yajna, which is there in the Vedas. But as I said, it's not developed, and that is of refinement and purification. So the energy of yajna refines us. So when we offer it to the divine, the same energy, same power, it tends to become refined, and there is an uplifting. Again, this meaning, for example, I may look after the wife or husband or whoever, children, but I may do it as mine. That's how the Yajnavalka brings the greater sense of the yajna. But I may do it that they are all, I am a trustee, they are all of us are children of the divine. And how will my treatment with them change? I will not look after them with what I may get from them. But it's part of the larger spirit of Kartavyam Karma, which the Gita brings out very powerfully. Second aspect of Yajna, which is there again, if you take the Purushukta of the Rig Veda, it's there implicit, but that's not how it is understood. That there is a secret oneness which is tying everybody. So Yajna also implies that everybody does the Ahuti, but what will come out of it, what you will be given is Prasad, which is given to all. So when Pujari does the Puja and puts the Bhog, after that he cannot say, who gave the greater Chadava? It is done, unfortunately. He takes the larger share. No. Everybody gets the share. So that is very beautiful. The spirit of Yajna in the true sense is opens the door to collective yoga. But if I do Yajna with the idea even of personal mukti, then it's the same thing. But the moment I understand that all these energies, that's why Nishkam Karma comes there, that I'm not doing it for what I may get out of it. The divine will give me whatever is needed. But I am doing it for the collective good. That's what is the spirit of Yajna. Yajna is comes from that Prajapati, the sense that there is oneness in creation. But that's not how it is brought out. Ultimately, Yajnas are done for various things, including cricket matches. I'm not against it. I'm saying it's fine. But we should go to the highest. The Gita develops this to the ultimate. Also, the Gita brings in that idea of a beyond Nirgun and Sagun to the Uttamam Purusha. Now, in the Vedas, again as it is understood, there are verses one can quote in another sense. But the relation with God at one point becomes meaningless. You can use it on the path. That's how a traditional Mayavadin will explain it. That you can pray to the gods. But at the end, they are also illusion. See, Nirguni Guni Bhajans, if you hear of Kabir, he says, Maya Badi Thagani. It cheats everybody, including the gods. So, but you can relate with the gods to take help. But eventually you have to go beyond into that state of Nirgun, Nirakar. So the problem is that meaning and purpose of the world remains unfulfilled. There is a big blank. And your individual mukti means ultimately it's the supreme selfish act which Gita bids us not to do. It says that you have to act, Arjun, in spite of everything. Because Lok Sangrahart, it speaks of Trigunatit, Bhavasavisachi, then fight the battle. So that's the whole idea. Now, you have verses. Isha Upanishad, I agree. At least Shurvindo's interpretation very clearly. Even Kena Upanishad to an extent. But the general mass of Upanishads tends to become otherworldly. That incidentally was the problem since you have mentioned it. Because Vedas, at least Karma Kanda, kept you connected with this worldly and the otherworldly. Upanishad brought out the jnana. So it was a jnana which was projecting you into the otherworldly state. At least over a period of time, that's what happened. So the Gita did a course corrective, put people back on the path of evolution. Because the original karma is Sri Krishna's karma, he says that. He is the one who has visarjat, he is the one who has released the energy of motion. So, original karma is the divine's karma, if you really look at it. Otherwise, who did the first karma? So, there are questions which have been remained unanswered.